Test 1, 2. We got it. Got sound. Plug it in, turn it on, turn it up. Are we ready to go this morning? We need a quorum, let's see. Sorry.
Mr. Chairman, you do have a quorum now, so.
I'd like to call the meeting to order. I'd like to welcome everyone here. And I'd like to call the roll, please.
Commissioner Shajian.
Here.
Commissioner Burke. Commissioner Neely.
Here.
Commissioner Potter.
Here.
Commissioner Kinsey.
Here.
Commissioner Schoenbaum.
Here.
Commissioner Wan.
Here.
Chairman Kruer.
Here.
You have a quorum.
We have a quorum, and it's always good to see ex-commissioners and see the Honorable Pedro Nava here today.
Dressed up.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay, and with that, I'd go back to staff for your announcements today on changes and procedures for today's hearing.
Good morning, Chairman Crew and Commissioners. First, I'd like to go over the changes for today. On page 15 of your agenda, item 5B, the Pastorino appeal, we are recommending be postponed, but that's a discretionary decision for the commission. On page 16, 6A, the Caltrans item, District 4, we're recommending be moved to consent. On pages 17, items 12A and 12B are postponed, and item 12C is withdrawn. And then in the addendum, item 12D, the Crescent City matter, we're recommending be moved to consent. On page 18, item 16, Colmer, is postponed. And finally, on page 19, item 17A, the Caltrans item and Pedro Blancas, we're recommending also be moved to consent. For members of the public that are here today that may wish to speak on an item, you do need to fill out a speaker slip, which you can find outside the hearing room at the table. Indicate which item you wish to speak to and whether you're in support or in opposition to the staff recommendation. In addition, if you do have a cell phone, if you could turn it off or take your conversations outside, and that would facilitate the hearing. That's it with the changes at this time, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. And with that, we'd like to just take a moment before we get into the regular agenda and welcome Rick Cameron here today from the Port of Long Beach, and he's asked that he could just bring us up to date on an announcement on some proceedings tomorrow, et cetera. Welcome, Mr. Cameron. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Commissioners. I do appreciate the ability to come up here for a few minutes. I won't take much of your time. I know you have a busy agenda. What I want to do is come here today and let the commission know about a really good event that we have going on at the Port of Long Beach tomorrow. It's our third annual Green Port Fest. The last 2 years we've called it our Green Port Open House. This is our one of our major community engagement events that is been part of our mission for the last 3 years since our Board of Harbor Commissioners approved the Green Port policy back in 2005. Briefly, the Green Port policy is the port's way of being more proactive and considering the environment as a whole. And with that, this event tomorrow is one that highlights across the board how the port is moving forward in various arenas, whether it be air quality, water quality, soils, sediment, wildlife that's within the harbor, as well as community engagement, as well as overall sustainability for port operations and thinking about the future. A few of the principal guidelines of our Green Port policy is first and foremost to protect the community from harmful side effects of port operations. Currently, right now, today, as we speak, there's a joint Board of Harbor Commissioner meeting for the Port of Los Angeles and Port of Long Beach to have a public hearing regarding the cleaning up of the existing port drayage trucks that call the ports. This is part of one of the programs that is one of the key things as part of our San Pedro Bay Clean Air Action Plan that both ports jointly approved a year ago, and which was really a catalyst that was started by Dr. Burke here on your commission, with bringing both our both port commissioners, President presidents of the commission at that time to talk about how we need to deal with overall air quality and the port impacts to the community as a whole. And since then, we've been, both ports have been moving forward jointly with implementation of various programs. And there's kind of highlights, once again, the Port of Long Beach, but it's hard not to talk about the Port of Los Angeles, because in all of our efforts now, we look at San Pedro Bay as a whole and not just individual ports. And so with that being said, I just wanted to just once again let you know about our Port of Long Beach Greenport Fest tomorrow, and you're all welcome. The community is welcome. It's a great event. We will have boat tours. We will that will go out through the day, and we'll only go on the Port of Long Beach side, but it actually gets a waterside view of the port complex, and it's much different from the waterside if you've ever been on a port tour. In addition, we're also going to have this year actually a rail tour. We're actually bringing Metro rail cars down. We're going to be hooking up with one of the most cleanest locomotives that we have down that operates in the port. And it's actually going to be going in through one of our Pier G, our ITS terminal, which is currently being redeveloped. And the reason why we're highlighting that is it's instrumental as part of our green port policy moving forward, having green leases. And the ITS lease is one of the first green leases for the Port of Long Beach, which really deals with the big issues from port operations. I think one of the bigger ones is dealing with cargo handling equipment, bringing the cleanest cargo handling equipment, as well as dealing with the ship emissions at berth, which are huge sources of emissions. And so it's a good opportunity for the community to really see what the port does. And talking to you on the commission, it's important because our life is the Coastal Act, the Tidelands Trust and the Coastal Act, and we do hold that true and dear to our heart with our port master plan. So with that being said, I do thank you for the opportunity to talk, and if there's any questions that you have to ask, answer any of them.
Thank you, sir, and thank you for telling us about your Green Port Fest, and I know it'll be very successful, and we're glad that you could come here and tell us about it today. We didn't need the great compliments about Dr. Burke, but, you know, that's fine, too. Commissioner Burke, would you like to say something on this?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I did. Thank you very much for the compliment. But when I arranged that meeting between the Long Beach port and the Los Angeles port, it was the first time in the history of both ports that they ever had met in joint session. And yet they were only a few miles apart. But they took the ball and they have run with it. They've done a great job. And I think that the next few years are going to show enormous progress in the air quality in this area. So the Port of Los Angeles and the Port of Long Beach are doing just great work in the environment right now.
Thank you, Commissioner Burke, for those comments, and thank you, sir, for coming today.
Thank you for the time, and have a good day.
Okay. And with that, I'll go back to staff and
yes, Mr. Chairman.
Director Douglas.
Before I turn it back to Charles, let me just note, last night we handed out addenda to you. You should have picked them up either at the desk or in your room. Charles took them around to, I guess you dropped them off at the desk, right? Yeah, at the front desk. Oops. Okay, we'll have to get those. But part of the handout included a letter from the from Jerry Mello, who's a member of the council, City Council, Fort Bragg. This is that League of Cities subcommittee to work with the Coastal Commission to improve communications, and that letter not only lists what they're proposing to do, but it also includes a poll that they had taken of city representatives, and I really would urge you to look at that because I intend for us to discuss that at the next meeting. So please do that, and we'll see what we can do about retrieving the addenda from the desk and getting them to you.
Maybe you can go get that.
extras at the desk.
Dr. Lester?
Excuse me, who did not get the addendum last night? Okay.
How about everybody?
Except for Commissioner Kinsey. All right. You got it. You didn't. Okay. See whether Vanessa can round those up.
Dr. Lester?
Okay. Thank you, Chairman Kruger. The North Central Coast District is first up today, and under the Deputy's Director report, I just wanted to first briefly give you a short update on the Lawson's Landing matter, which has been pending for several years now. We had agreed to come back to the Commission every couple months and give you an update of the progress on that item. In short, staff is continuing to meet closely with the county staff and the applicants, the Lawsons, concerning the ongoing county process in County of Marin with respect to not only the EIR process that's been underway, but also the pending coastal permit action that will be happening in Marin. And those meetings have been productive. We've extended some time limits under the enforcement consent order in order to facilitate coordination between the county's EIR process and our coastal development permitting concerns. But notwithstanding that, we do believe that the county is still on track to essentially meet the time deadlines that were anticipated last December when the commission agreed to the consent order. So that's the update. At this point, it looks like the county just recently issued its final EIR to the public. We have copies of that. It's anticipated that will be certified sometime later this fall by the board, and that the Planning Commission will be engaging the coastal development permit process at the county level also later this fall, and that hopefully the Commission will be in a position to review its coastal development permitting responsibilities sometime later spring or mid next year, which is essentially in keeping with the timelines anticipated by you last December. So unless there are any questions on that matter. Okay, under the Deputy Director's report, I do have one minor item to report, a de minimis waiver, and I'm not aware of any objections to that item.
Any objection to finding concurrence? Hearing none, the Commission concurs.
That brings us to item four, which is the consent calendar. And earlier this morning, I mentioned we were recommending that item 6A, the Caltrans item, be moved to consent here. This item is similar to an item later on the agenda, 17A, which is also a Caltrans item. And both of these items are temporary approvals of rock revetments in various locations to protect Highway 1 in critical locations at risk from erosion. We've gone to great lengths to coordinate and work with Caltrans on these projects to allow the temporary authorization of revetments in these locations while we can work on long-term solutions for potentially realigning Highway 1 or identifying other environmentally preferable alternatives for protecting the highway in these locations. So we've worked on conditions that have benchmarks and performance measures for addressing the preferable long-term solution to these, and I'm not aware of any objections to these items. We did have one recent issue raised concerning the potential impacts of these revetments on aspects of the marine beach environment and the beach ecology, and at this time, you know, staff doesn't really have the information to address that question either in these site-specific issues or as a matter of statewide methodology or approach. However, you know, if the Commission was interested in taking on that issue, it would be something that we could put on our agenda for consideration from a statewide standpoint. But that being said, we are not recommending that these items be heard on the regular hearing calendar.
Okay. Commissioner Wan, you wanted to say something first.
I just think that's an issue that perhaps we should look at.
Okay. Commissioner Potter on the consent calendar.
Second.
Moved by Commissioner Potter, seconded by Commissioner Akajian. And they're both of them, maker and the seconder, asking for a yes vote. Is there any objection to a unanimous yes roll call vote on this item? Hearing none, the consent calendar is approved. We go to 5A.
So I do have a presentation for 5A, a PowerPoint presentation. Item 5A is a new appeal, and we are recommending a substantial issue and approval with conditions. As an overview comment, we are in agreement with the applicant, who I believe is here today, to address any questions you may have, but he is in complete agreement with the proposed approval with conditions. The project is a new single-family residential development on agricultural lands in San Mateo County, and similar to other issues the Commission has dealt with in previous several years ago, we were concerned about agricultural issues raised by this conditional use on ag lands, and therefore we do believe there are substantial issues raised by the project. At this time, unless three or more commissioners would like to discuss substantial issue, we would recommend you find substantial issue.
Ex parties, starting on my left, are there any ex parties on this? Any on my right? None. Then I'll ask the commission, do three or more commissioners object to finding substantial issue? Hearing none, the commission finds substantial issue, and we'll move into the...
So with respect to the permit and the de novo review, now that you have your packets, there is a short addendum in the packet for this item which makes some clarifications but doesn't change the substance of the recommendation and the special conditions. Just briefly, an overview. The project, as I mentioned, is in rural San Mateo County, south of Half Moon Bay. This is an aerial photo of the parcel in question. It's about 60 acres and, as I mentioned, is an active agricultural production. This is an area that has been identified as actively farmed in oats over many years. This is a estimated location of the site that the county approved for development of a new single-family home in the agricultural production area. This is a shot from the ground of what that looks like when it's in production. And this is a site plan that the county approved. You can see this is an agricultural area, and the county approved an approximate 900 linear foot driveway into the development site of about 15,000 square feet in size. Staff has worked closely with the applicant, and we appreciate his efforts in helping us address the issues that this commission has previously been dealing with respect to protection of agricultural lands in San Mateo County. We've reached agreement on a relocated home site, which, as you can see, is a previously disturbed location, not in an agricultural production area. We've also worked with the applicant. This is a close-up shot of that disturbed area. There's already a concrete pad in this location as well. We worked with the applicant on incorporating into the project special conditions to limit the future residential development envelope to 10,000 square feet, which is what which is consistent with this commission's actions and prior actions on the matters in San Mateo County. In order to minimize impacts to agricultural lands, they've also agreed on an agricultural easement, an affirmative agricultural easement, to make our best effort at assuring that the agricultural areas of the property stay in production. So, as I mentioned, we are in agreement with the applicant on the conditions. The one final set of conditions that are important are mitigations to assure no adverse impact to sensitive habitats. Although the presence of red-legged frog and garter snake are unlikely, there is a slight potential, so we've got conditions in there to deal with that during development of the site. And that would conclude the... one last change to special condition 4. Just a clarification, we'd like to replace the last sentence of that condition, which concerns the landscaping plan, and replace that sentence with the following language. The plan shall assure that no plant species listed as problematic and or invasive by the California Native Plant Society, the California Invasive Plant Council, or as may be identified from time to time by the state of California, are used or allowed to persist on the site. The plan shall also ensure that no plant species listed as a noxious weed by the state of California or the U.S. federal government are used. So just to update that condition in keeping with the commission's practice and other items. That concludes the staff presentation.
Thank you, Dr. Lester. With that, I'll open the public hearing. We have one speaker slip, Mr. Sherman Chan. Sir, how much time are you requesting?
3 minutes.
Yes, sir.
Chairman Crowder and commissioners, I'm Sherman Chan, the applicant. I fill out the slip just to simply to say that that I'm in total agreement with these recommendations, the findings, and the conditions, and I hope that you will approve this project, which will be a home for me and my wife and my 14-year-old son. Thank you.
Thank you, sir, for coming and for your testimony. Yes, Commissioner Potter.
Mr. Chair, I move the commission approve coastal development permit number A-2-SMC-06-021 pursuant to the staff recommendation. Recommend a yes vote.
It's been moved by Commissioner Potter and seconded by Vice Chair Neely. Both the maker and seconder are asking for a yes vote. Passage of this motion will result in the approval of the permit as conditioned and adoption of the resolutions and findings as contained in the staff report. Would you like to speak to your motion, Commissioner Potter?
No.
Vice Chair Neely?
No.
Okay. Is there any objection to a unanimous yes roll call vote on this item? Hearing none, the commission unanimously approves the coastal development permit for the proposed development and adopts the findings set forth in the staff report. Thank you.
Item 5B is also a new appeal in the city of Half Moon Bay, and we were recommending substantial issue only in this appeal, but we've also now recommended that the commission postpone the discussion of the substantial issue or consideration of that at this time, given information from the city and the applicant that speaks directly to that question of substantial issue. So we think it would be appropriate to postpone. We do have a 49-day waiver.
Okay. Commissioner Potter? Move for postponement?
Second.
Moved by Commissioner Potter and seconded by Vice Chair Neely, and they're asking for a postponement. And is there any objection to a unanimous yes roll call vote on this? Hearing none, the commission unanimously approves the postponement.
And item 5C, which is in the addendum, is also a new appeal, and we are recommending substantial issue only. And in this case, the project is approval of a domestic well on agricultural lands in the county of San Mateo near City of Half Moon Bay. It's not a City of Half Moon Bay appeal. It's a county appeal. But the appellant has raised questions about the consistency of this domestic well, which would be a permanent well development on agricultural lands, that raised questions about the consistency of that with agricultural and biological requirements of the LCP, and we are recommending that there's a substantial issue raised, particularly given the lack of analysis of those questions. And so unless three or more commissioners would like to discuss that question, we would recommend you find substantial issue and open the and continue the hearing to later date for de novo consideration.
Thank you, Dr. Lester. Any ex partes starting in my lap? No ex partes? Okay. Do three or more commissioners object to finding substantial issue? Hearing none, the commission finds substantial issue and will move to continue to a future de novo hearing. Okay.
Item 6A has been approved on the consent calendar.
Right.
Item 7A is a time extension on a Sonoma County LCP amendment. And we are recommending that the commission extend the time limit for consideration of this amendment for up to 1 year.
Okay. Commissioner Kinsey?
I move the commission extend the 60-day time limit to act on Sonoma County Local Coastal Program Major Amendment Number SON-MAJ-106 for a period of 1 year from October 14, 2007 to October 14, 2008.
Second.
It's been moved by Commissioner Kinsey and seconded by Commissioner Wasel. Both the maker and seconder are asking for a yes vote, and passage of this will approve the time extension per the staff recommendation. Is there any objection to a unanimous yes roll call vote on this time extension? Hearing none, the commission approves the time extension.
And the last item for the North Central Coast District is item 7B, which is Executive Director's determination that an action by the City of Half Moon Bay certifying the city's local coastal program amendment number major 1-02 is adequate to effectively certify its local coastal program. And staff is recommending that the commission concur with that determination.
Is there any objection to finding concurrence with the Executive Director's determination? Hearing none, the commission concurs. Okay, we're going to go to 8. Statewide permits regulations. You can get set up here. Ms. Hanch, what's interesting today, and you've worked hard on this, and your whole staff have done a very good job. We have, for something like this important, I'm surprised we have no speaker slips. So, but take your time and go.
I'm actually amazed because we did a huge amount of public outreach.
It's amazing. You know, it's just a very important issue, but we don't have any speaker slips. Take your time. Go through whatever you need to do. I just thought I would share that with you because it's surprising to the commissioners, I think. You know. Yeah.
The written public comment period closed, the current one closes on October 29th, so we are expecting more written comments that the commission will then consider in November. So that may be one element of it.
Okay. Well, however you want to proceed on this is...
Okay. Well, we're ready to go.
Okay.
Thank you.
The commission's filing fees have not been raised since 1991. The fees are currently lower than local government fees and the fees charged by other state agencies. The Department of Finance, the legislature, and the governor, through his budget veto messages, has been pushing the commission to raise its fees. Our goal is to have the new fees in effect by January 2008, if at all possible. Legislative consideration of the commission's budget begins for the next fiscal year in late January, and the legislature would like to know that the fees have been raised. And in order to change the commission's regulations and raise the permit and filing fees, we must follow detailed procedures required by the Administrative Procedures Act and administered by the Office of Administrative Law. The procedures are very complex, and the timing is difficult to mesh with the commission's monthly meetings. Essentially, every time changes are made to the proposed package, another public review process starts. So it's very important that if the commission has concerns, for us to hear them, and then we make decisions on them, and then another public review process begins. If there are no significant comments at that point, or the commission doesn't want to make changes in the future, then we're finished. But if changes are made at every meeting, the commission is used to hearing testimony, taking a vote, and being done. But if the commission takes testimony, makes significant changes, and takes a vote, then another process starts and it continues. And we want the commission to give all the comments that you feel are necessary, but I don't think you're going to be wanting to hear about this every month for the next year. So we ask your help in trying to narrow down the choices so that we can get them out to the public. All fees currently go to the Coastal Conservancy's Coastal Access Account for critical projects not funded by the bonds. We think that's very important. That the Conservancy continue to get some funding from the permit fees. The typical year, the fees are about $500,000. The legislature and the Department of Finance would like increased fees to go to the general fund. This would require a legislative change by the legislature and an amendment to the Coastal Act. The income for filing fees fluctuates based on the type of projects submitted in a particular year. So there's no guaranteed income. We estimate from our calculations of what the commission fees have been in the past that the total incomes from the new fees would be from $2 million to $3.7 million per year. One major concern the staff has is that while the proposed fees for most major projects before the commission are included, one key type of project is not included, and that is project-driven LCP amendments. There are large projects that take a lot of the commission time and a lot of staff time, and they're essentially like a master permit, but because the projects are defined as local coastal program amendments, and they are, the commission isn't allowed to charge for the fee for those projects. A change in the Coastal Act would have to be included to charge for those fees, and that's something we think we should seriously consider. You have before you a yellow handout today. It's exactly what was in your staff report. There are no changes. We just thought it would be a little easier to follow today if you could just have this in your hand. When Madeline Cavallari goes through the details, she'll be referring to pages on the yellow sheet to make it a little bit easier. And now I'm going to have Madeline go through the proposed changes. And before we end today, there are three components of changes we would like you to consider. And there's a motion in the staff report. We suggest that you consider them separately so that you can choose whether you want to go forward with the three changes. One is on indemnification, the other is on green building, and the third is a small revision about appeals. So we'll get to those at the end, but I would like you to understand that you can take them all or you can take one or the other. So now, Madeline, would you go through?
Good morning. In July 2007, the Commission authorized staff to proceed through the rulemaking process with proposed amendments. Staff has initiated the process, and we are now in the middle of the 45-day written comment period, which began on September 14th and will end on October 29th. Today, the Commission will take public testimony and will consider three revisions, as Susan said, to the originally proposed amendments. The Commission may also make any additional revisions that it would like to make. According to the Administrative Procedure Act, revisions to originally proposed amendments, which in this case were those approved by the Commission in July, can be considered non-substantial, substantial but sufficiently related, or major. Revisions that are not substantial require no additional public comment period. Sufficiently related changes require a 15-day public comment period, and major changes require a 45-day public comment period. If the Commission approves revisions today, staff will submit them to the Office of Administrative Law and will initiate the required additional comment period. Staff has determined that the proposed revisions are sufficiently related and should therefore require a 15-day comment period. If the Commission decides to make additional revisions that are not sufficiently related, a 45-day comment period will be required. At the November meeting in San Diego, after the initial 45-day written comment period, the Commission will again take public testimony as required by the Administrative Procedure Act and may make additional revisions to the amendments at that time. However, if revisions are made in November, an additional public comment period will be required, and the adoption of the regulation amendments will be delayed until after the close of that comment period. Because the Commission is only able to revise the proposed amendments at its monthly public hearings, this rulemaking process has the potential to become extremely lengthy. Therefore, staff recommends that the Commission fully consider the proposed amendments and make desired revisions today. I'd like to begin by reviewing the amendments that were proposed in July, and then I will present the newly proposed revisions. The amendments make four fundamental changes to the Commission's current filing fee regulations. They increase fees, add new fee categories, include an automatic fee escalator, and create two new fee reductions. The first change to the regulations is an increase in the fee amounts charged for processing applications. The proposed fees are stated throughout Section 13055 and are summarized in Exhibit E of the staff report. The exhibit can also be found on page 1 of the yellow handout. Staff determined these amounts based on the average complexity of the different types of applications and then used a survey of the planning fees of five local governments in the coastal zone to ensure the proposed fees are comparable to other agencies' planning fees. At the July 2007 Commission meeting, several commissioners expressed concern that the fee for small homes should be lower than the proposed fee and the fee for large homes should be higher. However, because the proposed fees were developed in relation to each other and to the total amount of staff time required to review applications, if we were to lower the fee for small homes, we would have to lower the fees for other categories as well. Also, many small homes are not reviewed as regular calendar items, but instead as administrative permits or waivers, which have lower fees. The small homes that are reviewed as regular calendar items are those that present issues that require additional review under the Coastal Act, and staff feels they should be charged accordingly. Also, you can see that the, looking at Exhibit Q of the staff report, which is on page 2 of the yellow handout, you can see that the proposed fee for a small home under 1,500 square feet is just a little over half of the average fee for small homes charged by local governments. The second change to the regulations is the addition of four new fee categories, including fees for federal consistency certifications, boundary determinations, certain types of appeals, and permit exemptions. The third change is the addition of an automatic fee escalator. The fee escalator will allow the commission to adjust its fees each year by the amount of inflation without having to go through the rulemaking process. And the final change to the regulations proposed by staff in July is the addition of two new provisions for fee reductions. Currently, the commission has the discretion to waive or reduce permit fees when they feel it is necessary. Staff proposes to keep this discretion, as well as to add the possibility of a fee reduction for affordable housing projects and for green building projects. As I said earlier, there are three newly proposed revisions that would modify the amendments proposed by staff and authorized by the commission in July. Today, staff is requesting that the commission decide if they want to approve any or all of these revisions so that if revisions are made, staff can incorporate them into the rulemaking process for a public comment. The three revisions address green building, indemnification, and appeals. Regarding the green building fee reduction, staff determined that the commission and commission applicants would benefit from a regulation that uses specific criteria to determine if applicants would qualify for the reduction. To develop appropriate criteria, staff reviewed several programs for measuring a project's environmental performance, including the U.S. Green Building Council's Leadership in Energy and Environmental Design, or LEED, Build a Green's Green Point Rated, and a number of local government programs. Staff also met with several experts in the field of green development to get a better understanding about the direction of green building markets, standards, and regulations. After careful consideration, staff has determined that the U.S. Green Building Council's LEED standards most closely reflect the intent of the original fee reduction language approved by the Commission in July. LEED uses a point-based rating system, requiring a minimum number of points from various development-related categories. These categories are consistent with the resource protection policies of the Coastal Act, with more than half of all available points coming from project site design, water resource, and energy efficiency considerations. The revised regulation would reduce the fee by 40% for projects that receive a LEED Gold or Platinum certification or an equivalent certification under a different green building program approved by the executive director. The regulation would only apply to applications received prior to January 1st, 2015, because staff expects that many more green building applications will be received in the future and the fee reduction may no longer be warranted. The revised regulation also details a requirement for the applicant to submit a cash substitute, such as a letter of credit, at the time the application is submitted. The cash substitute would then be released back to the applicant after submitting proof of qualifying certification. Staff also considered discounts and traditional refunds as ways to implement the fee reduction, but found that a discount given at the time the application is submitted is not possible because green building certifications are granted after construction is complete. And a traditional refund is not possible because the commission is unable to hold funds through multiple fiscal years. The complete text of the revised regulation is included in Exhibit H and on page 3 of the yellow handout. At its August 2007 meeting, the commission considered adding an exemption for single-family homeowners from any requirement that the commission may impose on an applicant to indemnify the commission against litigation costs or fees that the commission may incur in defending a legal challenge to development approval. Staff has prepared language that would achieve this and proposes to add it to Section 13055G. Again, this is in Exhibit H, which is page 3 of the yellow handout. It states in part that the commission shall not require an applicant for a permit for one single-family dwelling to reimburse it for litigation costs or fees that the commission may incur in defending a judicial challenge to the commission's approval of the permit. The third and final revision to the amendments proposed in July is the addition of a reference in Section 13111 to the proposed fee for appeals. The reference is necessary to ensure that the regulations are internally consistent in light of the proposed amendment. This revision would not make a substantive change. It would simply clarify the regulations. It is also on page 3 of the yellow handout. It's page 4 is the new language, the reference. So to conclude, staff strongly recommends that today the commission fully consider the proposed amendments and make any revisions it feels is necessary. Making revisions today instead of at a future commission meeting will potentially reduce the amount of time required to complete the lengthy rulemaking process. The motion to approve the three newly proposed revisions can be found on page 3 of the staff report. Thank you.
So we turn it back to the commission and the public for comments.
Okay. No speakers. And so well, I'm sure everyone's had a chance to go through the well, first of all, let's take out of ex parte first and just ask everybody, because we are taking some actions here today. Any ex parte starting on my left? No ex parties. Okay. I'll open it up to my colleagues for questions. Commissioner Akajian and then Commissioner Wan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know that this is way overdue, and since 91 we did the last time, and if you will look at the inquiries, it will scare people. I was going to recommend that at the most we revisit this. I know every year will be kind of difficult, but not any longer than 3 to 5 years, that we revisit these figures and do the increases as needed, rather than wait for 16 years and triple the amounts and quadruple the amounts. It's just the message. It won't be well accepted.
We hear what you're saying, and in the proposal that we have before you today, it includes an automatic escalator clause that would be, so the fees would be raised every year based on the consumer price index, and so that wouldn't happen in the future. We think you have an appropriate comment, and so we tried to address it.
Okay. Hi, Commissioner Wan.
Yes, I have a concern about the change in the green, in the way you've changed the green building fee reduction. Initially, I realized that you were looking for some standards, but in the initial fee reduction, it was based on a whole group of different coastal resources that could be protected. And now it's based, so if I understand this, it's based solely on this green building council determination. My concern with that is that that is primarily, and it's great, what to get that certification is primarily energy efficiency and building materials and things like that. So we no longer have a means, for example, if somebody wants to do something extraordinary to deal with habitat protection in the way of setting aside land or whatever it is, they don't get any credit for that. And I think that what you've done, in my opinion, is to narrow this a little bit more than you perhaps should have.
Mm-hmm. I think that staff felt that LEED does address things like habitat protection and open space. It also addresses things like helping out with incorporating new development into public transportation, and we felt that it really was a broad range of things that address things that are similar to the Coastal Act. And I think also it's good to keep in mind that the commission, at any time it feels it's appropriate, is able to reduce fees. And so maybe that's something that if there was a future project that really was extraordinary but did not comply with the LEED standard, maybe that's something the commission could look at?
Well, that's not clear from what's in here. It seems to be limited to LEED. And maybe one of the things I need to do is to see or understand better what the LEED criteria are.
Okay.
Because maybe I'm not familiar enough to know whether it covers it. But if there are extraordinary circumstances that could lead to a fee reduction, somehow that needs to be made clear, because that certainly wasn't clear to me in reading this.
Okay.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, the commission does have the ability currently to reduce or eliminate fees. We have very rarely done that.
Understood.
Because of all of the requests that we might have. We have lots of requests from nonprofit organizations, for example, to waive fees. And you did, your predecessor commission did that at one time on one occasion, and it kind of opened a floodgate. And then the commission looked at it and was getting requests where you just said, well, there are nonprofits and there are nonprofits, and you decided not to do it anymore.
Understood.
So,
but you can see why my concern is that we may have, you know, that's not apparent that we could do it. And
right.
And my concern about perhaps narrowing it a little bit too much. And okay. I would like to maybe understand better what the lead criteria are.
We can re-look at this before the next hearing and make, and then give you some more information, too.
Thank you.
I'd just like to ask a couple questions I've discovered this morning reading this, and I think I, first of all, I'd like to state that I support increasing the fees and looking at it and doing that. The only concern I have is when I was going through them this morning was early was that the fees for all the single family, et cetera, seemed to make logical sense in what you're doing. The concern I had was when we came, as long as everybody understands what we're doing, the commercial and industrial development fees, because you're basing them on either gross square footage or development cost, whichever is greater, there's a real concern here that everyone should understand, and if that's what you want to do, that's what we should do. But, for example, if you take page 17 and you look at the lower quadrant of what you're suggesting of the square footage is, even starting with the 25 to 50,000 or the 50,000 to 100,000, let me take the example of a 50,000 square foot project. And what we're, the current fee is 12,000. Proposed fee on square footage would go to 30,000 or about a 250% increase. What's going to happen is you'll end up in almost all cases never using the gross square footage thing because the greater of will be this fee based upon development costs. Because currently, if you take any project that is, you know, let's just take the 50,000 square feet, even down to the industrial level type development, office buildings, apartments buildings, retail buildings, you get up, depending on what parts of the state you're in, your development costs most always exceed $200 a square foot. So what's going to happen is you're going to have everybody kick into the proposed fee is going to be $100,000. Now, that's going to be a little bit of a shocker because all of a sudden somebody that has a small project, that a small project, it doesn't take much to have a $10 million development. I for one, don't think we should raise fees 850% on somebody. And that's what happens because I think it's very good, the scaling that you've tried to achieve here, but the boxes need to be reexamined because what's going to happen is all these fees are going to be based on development costs the way you have them skewed now. That you're going to fall into it even in the 25,000 square foot, the 50,000. You'll never touch that proposed fee of 20. You'll jump right up and you'll get the 50,000. So you're going to have all the fees in development because of the cost of development costs. You're going to have these tremendous increases, and somebody's going to walk in and say, what do you mean $100,000 for processing this? So that's one concern I have because, trust me, you're going to kick these fees all based on, it won't be the greater of square footage or development costs. You just might as well give them the development cost summary here because that's what your fees are going to be. Number two, the other thing that you want to maybe look at and for further study or discussion is the grading fees. Personally, I don't have any problem the grading fees of charging. I think, if anything, these are too small. Grading takes a lot of study and understanding and does the most impact in development, especially towards coastal resources, et cetera. And one of the things, if you want to look at, I certainly don't have any problem, but to have a project that has 100,000 cubic yards of grading and they're only charged $1,500, I'll tell you, I think you're better off to charge more there and analyze that type of development, et cetera, because I think you could get more fees in the grading area, and it would be a prudent decision on our part, both for protecting coastal resources and to looking at these projects with more detail. And so if we put more money in there, I think we'll maybe the fees, et cetera, will have the money to look at that, because that's where the problems in development all come from down the road, is whether or not the infrastructure from the ground down was done correctly, the grading and all these issues, etc. So I just caught that this morning as one of the things that we might look at. And that's just a couple of areas I wanted to mention this time. I don't want to hog all the time, and I'll turn it back over to my commissioners. But again, the fees that you're talking about on the other categories, they seem fair and logical. I'm just concerned about the commercial and development fees that you're really going to have some questions, I think, when people realize that it's all going to be based on development costs, and you're really going to kick into much higher numbers. So, okay.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, and Susan may have some additional comments, one of the realities here is that these are fees that are only charged when it's an area of your retained or original jurisdiction. So it doesn't apply to the vast majority, in fact, I would say over 95% of what you see, which is really approved at the local government level, where they charge the fees. We don't charge those fees. It's only in those areas where you don't have a certified LCP, where the commission is approving development in the first instance. So it doesn't apply to any of the commercial projects, for example, that come to you on appeal. Yeah. There would be no fee. So that's just a consideration.
I understand that. But if it applied to one person, if I'm Joe Blow and I come in here and you tell me I have to pay a $100,000 processing fee for a small project that I've owned for many, many years, et cetera, I would say there's no way that you're going to incur, you know, should you have that kind of fee, $100,000. You'd be out of the alignment of the other cities and counties and competition. And what I'm trying to do is avoid any criticism, make sure that we're being fair and equitable to all parties here. And I'm not so sure we're being fair and equitable if we set up a trigger mechanism that, and I have no problem with that, but I think those boxes should be more interrelated. Normally when you do that, if you base it on square footage, then you'd say, okay, or based on development costs, whichever the greater of, usually there's a close proximity or parity between the two. One might be a little higher, but not certainly to the point where one, the fee goes up 250%, the other one, which you're going to kick in all the time, in most cases would go up 850%, according to my calculations. And I'm not so sure we want to do that if there was even two applicants out there to tell them that they have to pay on a small project $100,000 fee to us. I'm not so sure that's fair. I think the staff's done a remarkable job on this and thinking this through and looking at it, but it didn't dawn on me this morning until I started thinking about these other fees that I'm concerned if it's one person, just one commissioner. You know.
So Chairman Kura, we'll take a look and we'll run a couple of projects from past history through and see what it would cost. I think that'll help.
Well, take a look at it, because I can tell you development costs, I understand, and you in almost all areas of commercial development, even down to the industrial today with a cost of development cost, you can't use historic norms. I mean, we, and I don't care where you are, the cost today, even building apartments in the city of Los Angeles, is hard cost is $245 a square foot. So you apply those numbers plus other total development costs and soft costs and everything else, you're pushing your industrial prices now over $200 a square foot. What's happening is you're going to kick into all these much, much higher fees. And I'm not so sure that's what you intend. If you do intend, people need to understand it's dramatic. Okay? So Commissioner Lowenthal and then Commissioner Akagia.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wanted to understand why we were proposing two different schedules, just for a point of clarification. Why is there a schedule based on square footage and a schedule based on the cost of development? And then whichever is greater. I understand the rationale in a sense, but really I don't.
It was the structure that we had in the existing regulations, and so we were trying to follow that process and not change them radically and give people options. We'll take another look at it and see if it's better to just use one or the other. But this is the way the Commission's regulations have always been, and many other agencies' regulations are this way. So it sort of gives, I think what Commissioner Kuru was saying too, it gives people an option depending on sort of the kind of their development. But we'll take another look and see if it's simpler to do it based on square footage or
I
based
think
on
there's probably greater equity if it's based on square footage as opposed to the cost of development, because if the cost of development rises, would we say that there's a proportional increase to our services in terms of the service we provide for that application process? So I think on equity, maybe square footage is better. I don't know what my own city does, and you're making me wonder, and I will have to go back and look at our own planning and building fee schedule. But I do appreciate this entire process you went through, because receiving the appropriate fees for the services provided is something that I think we in government hardly do, and it's kind of shocking to the public. My own city just went through this, and people are very accustomed to receiving public services at no cost, I think because they presume there's no cost involved. And so I support this. I support this wholeheartedly, and I especially appreciate the LEED standard, the broader the standard that you're using for those resources. I think it also conveys to the public that coastal resources are better preserved when there is sort of a collaboration amongst all conservation efforts, than that in essence does end up providing greater support for coastal resources. So I think that seems embedded and that message is embedded in this fee structure. So thank you for that. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Lowenthal, for your comments. And then Commissioner Kajian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a couple of questions for clarification and one major concern. The projects that we have in the pipeline, how are they going to be handled? Two, I read in the staff report that the executive director will or may give discounts or incentives to green building. How about if smart growth principles are they to be considered for any as incentives or discounts? And my final question and a concern with this increase is, where are we and how are we improving our services to our constituency? Who will be paying this cost? Obviously, where we lack services is due to shortage of staff. And are we then be allowed to do hiring and or increase staffing to offer better services or any other way that we might be able to, then paying the extra might not be as much of an ordeal if they want to receive something in return?
And those are excellent questions. The first project's already in the pipeline. If someone has already filed an application and paid the permit fee and they're in the process, it would be no effect on them.
Okay.
And once the regulations are, if you pass the regulations, say you pass them in November or December, it takes a month for the Secretary of State to, in the Office of Administrative Law, to finalize the approval. And so it's about a month after your action before they're in effect. So say they come in effect in January 1st, 2008. Anyone who filed an application with the Commission after that date then would be subject to the new regulations. As far as smart growth, my understanding is that LEED standards include the components of smart growth. If you're talking about concentration of development near transit areas, those sort of aspects, they're an element of the LEED standards. And we'll pull more of that out for you for the next meeting so you have more background on that. And then as far as your question about how we would be improving services for the public, the legislature and Department of Finance and the governor, through his veto messages, have continually told the commission in the last few years to raise permit fees. And they are making an association, and the governor's veto message, which is in your staff report, if you wanted to look at the wording there, on page 5, he specifically says, the California Coastal Commission has the authority to adjust its fees, and I'm willing to consider augmentations that address the commission's workload needs once fees have been adjusted to cover associated costs. So we are hoping by his message that he means that if fees are increased, that he will support and sign budget augmentations that address that. But if there are not improved staffing levels with the commission, the honest answer is there will not be improved services. I'm going to be giving you a detailed discussion of the budget at the next commission meeting, and frankly, there may be less services because our budget has been reduced over this last year in many ways, which I'll give you all the details and we can talk about next at the next meeting. But it's a very serious concern, as the person who's personally responsible for the commission's budget, it's something that keeps me awake at night. So
I appreciate your concerns as well, and I'm supportive of what's in front of us. But if I know that there will be absolutely no services improved, then I would not be supporting any increase.
It's sort of the chicken or the egg. That's the other reason why it's very important to us to try to get the commission to take action as soon as possible, because we would like to go back to the budget hearings, which start at the end of January, tell the legislature and Department of Finance and the governor's office that we have increased the fees. We do have a large budget, well, not large, we have a budget change proposal that Department of Finance is considering at this present time. They are considering it, and they do tell us that it is contingent on the approval of the fees. So there is a connection.
So can we then introduce any language such as we approve this with a condition that we'll be able to fill in the blank for our staffing needs? Would that give a message that they need to receive?
I think that would probably have to be in a separate resolution or something like that, but that's something we should consider.
I wouldn't mind if the chair and my colleagues feel like that should be a resolution, follow this motion to show our concern and our care to serve the public better by the additional staffing that's needed.
We could ask the commission, we could send a letter to the governor, a resolution, encourage others to send letters to the governor and Department of Finance. We'll look at that. I don't think it's appropriate in the actual regulations, but I think you raise a very important point, and I think we could do it on another track parallel.
Because as I said, if they're not going to be improved services, then for me there is no reason to.
Well, the other thing that's important to note is that the Office of Administrative Law, when we have to do this, what's called the initial statement of reasons, which we did, and then we have to provide additional reasons for the next revisions that we're submitting. And part of what you have to do is show the nexus between the fees that you're charging and what it's charged for and the benefits. And so I think the points that you're raising we can interject into those statement of reasons and make your points that way, which is the supporting documentation for the regulations. It's not actually in the regulations, but it makes the points and it's public and it goes to the Department of Finance and to the Office of Administrative Law. So we will do that.
Well, another observation, as you know, currently all permit fees from the Commission go to the Coastal Conservancy. They don't go into the general fund. And so there is that connection that permit fees collected from coastal applicants do benefit the coast. So, but what you're saying in terms of the services provided by this Commission, that's where the disconnect occurs. And having a letter or a resolution indicating your concern that increased fees, in fact, are tied to or should somehow relate to increased services is a good idea.
I believe a resolution is a stronger statement.
That's fine. We can bring that to you at a subsequent meeting and then have that accompany our transmittal of these fee increases.
With that, Mr. Chair, if there are no other questions, I'll move that the Commission revise amendments to Section.
You've talked, you've prefaced your comments at this time. And if you want to make the motion, I'd rather call on somebody and go back to them, okay?
No problem. I withdraw my half to the motion I made.
Okay. Commissioner Potter, do you want to say something now? And we'll go back to Commissioner Kaji and then.
That's okay. You don't have to come back to me.
Yeah. Okay. There's several people want to speak yet, but we'll come back to you. Okay, Commissioner Burke.
My questions have been asked. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Vice Chair Neely.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I support the package, and I had a couple of questions. One is, I was wondering if it's like local government in terms of the noticing. You only have to renotice if you increase the fee, but if we actually reduce them down, you don't have to renotice. Is that accurate with this process?
We have to renotice anything other than grammatical changes.
Okay, so even if the fee goes down.
So it's either a 15-day or a 45-day period. And mm-hmm. we will be renoticing the changes that you're making today. The comment period will be ending right before the November hearing, and then you will have the opportunity to vote on the whole package. If we get massive amount of public comments in the comment period and you think you should vote at a later date, you can do that.
Okay. I wanted to also speak to the indemnification clause and or condition or whatever it is, and I think that's fine, and I wanted to add for the record that I did speak with Commissioner Blank about that because he had some concerns initially, but he was fine with the language as well, so I just wanted to put that on the record.
Thank you, Vice Chair Neely. Commissioner Schallenbaum?
Yes, I just had one question regarding the green building provision and its sunsetting in 2015. Could you speak a little more to that and explain how that date came about? And also, do local governments have that same sunset provision?
Well, we chose a sunset date because, and we're suggesting it, because we believe at this point in time, this is an incentive to get people moving on the LEED standards, and that by 2015, they'll probably be the letter of the law or something equivalent. And the idea, and so then you wouldn't want to reduce your fees for something that everyone has to do anyway. So the idea was to have it be an incentive to get people going, because it's kind of complicated. It costs extra money for people to go through the certification process. So it was supposed to be a bonus incentive. If the commission in 2015 decides that they want to change, extend, or whatever, we could. But that was the purpose of why we put that in there. And as far as other local governments having a sunset clause, I'm not sure. We're not aware of that. All local governments are working on different adaptations and how they use the LEED standards.
Thank you.
And Ms. Hansch assures me she'll be here to make a recommendation in 2015.
Okay. Commissioner Wan? And
just a question on the after-the-fact permit and the, where you have the that the regulations would require ATF fees only for the portion of the project that was carried out without a permit. I could understand your example with the well and the house, but sometimes people come in for after-the-fact when it actually was the house that they developed with, which is not in the same location, and it's a different size. So I'm wondering, under those circumstances, why it's the increased fees is only applied to that part of the house that's an increase over.
We would, if it were a house that had been illegally begun or without a permit, without the benefit of a permit, we would apply the fee to the whole cost
okay.
of the house.
That
not,
was my
not,
concern.
Not of just one wall of the house.
Okay, that was my concern because obviously you do not, you want to discourage after the fact. Right, that's the reason. The other comments that I have very quickly are that I wanted to support Commissioner Kruer's comments about the grading fees and the fact that they probably are on the low side because he's correct and he knows his building standards, construction issues, that is a major source of the Coastal Act and coastal resource impacts. The other thing we've been talking about, and Commissioner Kruer, Chairman Kruer, is going to address that, is that his concern about, and I support him, about the fees and the way they're charged for land divisions and lot line adjustments, where he also feels that maybe in many of these instances they're too low. So.
Okay. I just, let me add to that on the, my concern on the land divisions is that where we talk about we're going to charge $3,000 for a subdivision, but for each, after the four lots, $500 for each additional lot, I would recommend to you that it does get considerably more difficult, and $500 might not be enough, because when you get a larger subdivision, there's so much more evaluation you need to do, having to do with drainage and all the other issues having to do with it. And I'm just, you know, if you want to adopt it at that, I'm just saying, if there was a way, a fairness equity issue, $500 a lot for a subdivision for each lot for processing is not very much after you get over that number, because the impacts as you get on the drainage issues and siting of the properties and the houses and everything else gets much more complex than looking at one single family lot where you're charging $3,000. It's multiple times more difficult when you analyze those impacts and how they affect surrounding resources and everything else. So it's just something you might want to look at on land divisions and lot line adjustments. If you're happy in that area where they're at, but they're always a lot trickier than people think, because again, a lot line adjustments, most of the time you do a lot line adjustment is somebody's trying to build another site for a house or something, a facility, not in all cases, but in a lot of cases it's a siting issue, and it ends up almost like a new lot, even though you don't create a new lot, but you create a new building pad or something like that that creates more analysis and setback issues and drainage issues and everything else because you've created another pad. So it's just something you might want to think about as you go forward. I'm not against any increase in that area. And when it comes to land division, lot line adjustments, grading, and things like that, those are the areas that require so much analysis and so much where you can get in trouble if it isn't done correctly. So if anything, I'd say your fees are low in this area. And I still have the same concerns that I did about the development cost issues.
Commissioner Kruger, I'd like to have Madeline go through the logic we used to get to those fees to explain why we did it that way. But also, we're very open to changing it, and we'd like some specifics today after you hear the explanation of how they're intertwined, and then see if you have a suggestion on how much you would raise the fees for the lot line adjustments. Because I think it's very important today if we can just spend more minutes to actually getting to the point where you're comfortable with the numbers. So let me have her explain that.
Well, if you're comfortable with them and my colleagues are, I don't want to belabor this.
No, I think this is the purpose of this. We're going to be living with these regulations for a long time, and taking a few more minutes now to work through them, I think it's time well spent, if you're okay with that.
I think that one of the reasons why we wanted to reduce the fee for lots after four lots is that because there's a cap of $100,000 on all types of residential, of any type of residential development, if we were to charge $3,000 for each lot, the fee for someone coming in with a 20-lot subdivision would be the same as the fee for someone coming in with a 200-lot subdivision. And we were a little bit concerned because the person with the 20-lot subdivision would so quickly get to the $100,000 cap.
Okay, I wasn't suggesting you charge somebody $3,000 for each additional lot, but there's a difference in what I'm saying when you look at a one-lot subdivision with the analysis versus or up to five lots than there is when you do 10, 20, 30, whatever, because you have so many more issues you got to deal with: sewer capacity, drainage, utilities, all the things that have to do with development.
Mm-hmm.
And so I understand what you're saying, and again, I'm not trying to belabor this. I'm just suggesting that maybe the number isn't $500. Maybe it's a little higher, $750 or $1,000.
Okay.
You know, and again, I'm not trying. If you guys are happy with it and you logically have thought it through, fine. I'm just saying, I'm saying there's some trade-offs here where you can balance some of these, et cetera.
Okay,
I'm more concerned on your kicker of gross square footage or development cost one, which I think triggers everybody into the $50,000 or $100,000.
Yeah, and I think that maybe what we should do is recalculate the fees for square footage based on that number you said of $200 or $250 a square foot to build.
Right.
I think we should go back and make sure that those are more commensurate than they are
now.
Yeah,
if you look at all types of development now, I don't care if it's retail, industrial, everything, you're now up over total development cost, not just hard cost. You're up over the $200 a square foot number. So even in the $25,000, it's going to kick you into those huge fees on very small projects.
Right. And the reason why I think we also need fees based on development costs as opposed to just doing it based on square footage, even though the fee per square foot will continue to increase, we do have projects that are not based on any square footage, like industrial things.
I don't have a problem even with that as one commissioner,
okay.
But I'm saying it's your trigger point at 5 million or 10 million, you're going to put almost all your commercial
right.
development projects, even the small ones, into that $50,000 or $100,000 box. And they might just get over it because
right.
And other square footage costs on other areas of other projects, et cetera, are higher than that. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, even industrial buildings with development costs will be in, you know, are way up there now. So, and that's why I want you to look at it.
And just one thing I could say about the grading, because the grading fees are in addition to any other part of the project that's being built, we felt that they were maybe sufficient the way they are now, but do you feel that we should still increase them, even though they're in addition? If someone came in for a home.
If there's any argument you ever have about government has of collecting from developers fees, it certainly would be the most fair issue would be on grading.
Okay.
Grading creates the most problems and the most potential damaging to resources, et cetera. And so I don't think anyone will argue with you that the developer, that the grading fee that you are proposing here is, if you did 100 or 200,000 cubic yards, isn't willfully low, you know. So, I'm just suggesting that you might want to look at that. I don't think anybody's going to have a quarrel with that, you know, when it comes to that. I just, land divisions, lot line adjustments, after the fact permits, I think you've taken care of very well from my perspective. And I think the single family stuff, the way you've structured it, makes sense and is fair after all these years, et cetera. I think you guys have done a very good job on it. I just think as long as everybody's comfortable, my colleagues are, I'm fine with it. But the trigger point of the development cost one bothers me because I think it's way out of skew in comparison to the square footage thing. And people are going to look at that square footage thing and say, oh, this is my fee. And then you tell them it's really up. You know, it's not $20,000, it's $100,000. I think they're going to have a little sticker shock, you know. Okay, I'll go to Commissioner Akajian for his motion. Commissioner Akajian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that the commission revise amendments to Section 13055 and add amendments to Section 13111 of commission regulations and recommend a yes vote.
There's a second. Okay, it's been moved by Commissioner Akajian, seconded by Commissioner Lowenthal, and they're asking for a yes vote. Would you like to speak to your motion, Commissioner Akajian?
No, Mr. Chair. I believe we discussed it pretty much in details.
Commissioner Lowenthal, same thing. Okay. Is there any objection to...
I just want to have a clarification. The commission has a choice to vote in one package, or if you are...
My motion
would
is
like
in one
to,
package.
You want to do, okay. Or they can also, you can also do them separately. But the one package is fine.
That's the intent of my motion, one package.
Okay.
Can I ask a question, too, on that? And we're going to vote on one package. Does this still allow you to look at the fact we're not approving the...
You're not approving the whole package of regulations. You're just approving these three changes so that we can reissue
good.
Public notice on the green building, the lead, and indemnification.
That's
all
thought.
You're doing today
okay,
on this vote. And then I do want to get back to the
That's
other
why I
wanted
clarification.
Yeah. That's all you're voting on now, just to let us reissue the public notice on these three elements.
Okay. Is there any objection to unanimous yes roll call vote on this item? Hearing none, the commission hereby approves unanimously the revised proposed amendment to Section 13055 and adds the proposed amendment to Section 13111 of the commission's regulations and directs staff to submit the revised amendments to OAL and initiate the additional comment period required under the Administrative Procedure Act. Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Commissioner Akajian.
A follow-up question, and would when you bring this back for a finalization, would it be at the same at that time we'll see the resolution that I spoke of earlier?
Yes, we can do that.
And I want to know if that's the consensus of the commission as direction given to the staff.
We will put that in the staff report you'll get for the next time when you're considering a vote. And if you would like, if we could spend a few minutes, maybe come back after your other items in 15 or 20 minutes and give you some suggestions for the lot line adjustments and the sliding scale, because if we do that today, then we can include those changes in the package we reissue.
And I think
if you'd be willing to do that, it would be really, it will save you a lot of time later.
I think, Mr. Chairman, that's a really good idea. So if Madeline and Susan can go huddle on those items, we can continue with the rest of the agenda, and then maybe they'll have some suggestions later. So
okay, that's a good idea.
And then Commissioner Ashajian's comment on the resolution, I assume, not hearing any objection from any of the rest of you, that that's the sense of the commission, that you
yes.
would like us to do that.
Yes.
Okay.
I think that will be extremely helpful. And our attorney's here with us, John Bauer, so we'll go revise things and be back to you in a few minutes.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. With that, Mr. Chair, that would bring us to the North Coast District, Deputy District Director's report. We did hand out a number of addendum items. You have the pink addendum and then the green, which contains three letters. And then we got a separate letter for relative to the Trask appeal. So you should have had the, received those. I just have three items that I want to mention to you from the North Coast. The first is relative to the South Spit Management Plan, the BLM's plan. As you recall, the commission in September heard from a member of the public about the, whether or not BLM was going to come back for a final management plan for the South Spit. And that was something that the commission expected when you approved the federal consistency determination submitted by BLM for the South Spit back in 2002. We did meet with representatives of BLM and indicated that we felt it was really important for them to come back to the commission in conformity with what they had represented. They had thought it wasn't necessary because their experience with the interim management plan has been very positive. The recovery or the success of the snowy plover nesting, the enforcement measures that they have in place, they found to be very successful. And we said that that may be good, but you still need to come back and tell the commission what you're going to do in terms of the final management plan. And it may be what you had in the interim. But so they've agreed to do that, and they will come back, and it may be in December. We're not sure. But in any event, I just wanted to follow up on that from last time. The second item I wanted to mention relates to the Humboldt Bay dredging project. As you know, the commission approved that for the 2005-06 period. You did approve disposal of the dredge materials on off the beach on the peninsula on the other side, and at that time you did require not only monitoring, but you also made it clear that the and required that the Harbor District come back with a report to you on the progress they're making to, in the future, ensure that disposal will no longer be at the beach or off the beach at the Spit or at the at Samoa. We just wanted to remind the Harbor District that that was what the Commission expected, because we recently saw a press release and indications from the Harbor District that they think that the monitoring report shows that there were no lasting adverse impacts, and kind of paving the way to come back for another request to dispose of dredge materials off the beach, which is not what the commission said was to happen. There were clearly disruption impacts that disrupted recreational uses. There were impacts. Mm-hmm. There may not have been permanent impacts, but there were impacts. So lest there be a false impression that the commission is entertaining the notion that you will support a future dredge disposal plan off the beach of Samoa, I just want to make this clear for the record, and perhaps they're even watching us as I speak and hearing this. So if you have any comments on
that. Vice Chair Neely.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, it was my understanding that that we only approved that because they agreed at the microphone to all the conditions that were imposed, and also that because it was under an old permit, and we pretty much shared with them that under the new standards that that type of disposal would not be accepted by the commission. So I think we made it clear. We could probably get a copy of the testimony of the executive director of the Harbor District if we need to. He certainly did on the record agree to all of those things when the permit was considered. So that's my understanding or recollection.
You're absolutely right, Commissioner Neely. That's what the commission did. That's what we understood, and that's what we expect. So the date for their update or status report in terms of planning for alternative disposal is December 31st. So we do hope that we have a status report for you at the December meeting. The last item I wanted to mention is relates to Talawa Dunes in Del Norte County. There we've been working with the Department of Parks and Recreation over the years because we have complaints from members of the public about off-highway vehicle use or four-wheel drive use in the sand dunes. The Department of Parks and Recreation did approve a regulation or a plan that allows street legal vehicles on the so-called wave slope of the beach next to Talawa State Park. And it's our position, and has been our position, that that action by the Department of Parks and Recreation requires a coastal development permit. We've held off on pushing that because State Parks has a funding problem, and they had an enforcement problem because of the lack of staffing to enforce the regulation that they approved. And I just found out we thought we were going to be seeing an additional ranger up there, but the budget cuts that State Parks also had apparently now mean that there isn't going to be an additional ranger. So we're back in the situation where they haven't received a development permit for the kind of use that they've authorized. They don't have a master plan or final plan for Talawa Dunes State Park. So I think we need to communicate to them that we somehow have to bring this to a head here because we just let it ride on the assumption they were going to have more enforcement capability. Now that they're not going to have that, I think we're going to have to tell them they have to come in for a permit. So I just wanted to give you an alert on that item.
Director Douglas, onto this report, don't you have some permit waivers or emergency things?
Yes, that brings us to the pink addendum. Contains two permit waivers, an emergency permit, unless there are any comments. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Is there any objection to finding concurrence? Hearing none, the commission concurs.
Okay, and that brings us to the consent calendar. We did move item 12D, City of Crescent City bike trail, to the consent calendar. We had one letter on that questioning the drainage. We think that what's being proposed is actually better than what the author of the letter proposes, and recommend that you approve the consent calendar.
Vice Chair Neely.
Mr. Chairman, I move approval of the consent calendar.
No. Been moved by Vice Chair Neely, seconded by Commissioner Potter. Both the maker and seconder are asking for a yes vote. Is there any objection to a unanimous yes roll call vote on the consent calendar? Hearing none, the commission unanimously approves the consent calendar.
That brings us to item 11A. This is an appeal. This is the Trask appeal, an appeal by the Friends of Del Norte, and another appellant of a approval of a 3,400-square-foot house that does not, in our view, comply with the creek setback, the ESHA protections in the LCP, because the permit as approved would require vegetation removal in ESHA, and we don't think that's allowable under the certified LCP. So we do think that the appeal raises a substantial issue with respect to that. or those two issues. There are several other points of raised in the appeal that we aren't basing our recommendation on, but relative to the ESHA impacts, we do think that there is a substantial issue. And unless three or more commissioners want to hear a debate on that, you will have found substantial issue, and we would bring this back then at a subsequent meeting for a de novo hearing.
Thank you, Director Douglas. Any ex parties on my left, my right? None. Do three or more commissioners object to finding substantial issue? Hearing none, the commission finds substantial issue. We'll move to the Central Coast, 13.
No, we have one more item.
12A.
This is item 12E, the RDHC.
Which one?
Application. Item 12E on the addendum. We had intended to move this to consent, but we didn't because we got a last-minute letter from the Wiat tribe raising questions about archaeological resource impacts. We have now added a condition that would require archaeological monitoring, a representative of the tribe, as well as an archaeological expert, and steps that need to be taken if in the process of carrying out this project they discover archaeological resources. The applicant is in agreement with this added condition, and that's why we took it off consent, so we could add this condition. But we recommend that you approve the project as recommended by staff with the modified condition on archaeology.
Any ex parties? Starting on my left, on my right. No speakers. Vice Chair Neely.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that the commission approve coastal development permit number 1-07-033 pursuant to the staff recommendation. Recommend a yes vote.
Moved by Vice Chair Neely and seconded by Commissioner Potter. Both the maker and seconder are asking for a yes vote. Is there any, would you like to speak your motion, Vice Chair Neely?
No, I think the staff handled
Commissioner
it well.
Potter? Is there any objection to a unanimous yes roll call vote on this item? Hearing none, the commission unanimously approves.
And I thank Mr. Bob Merrill for presenting, preparing my documents here for this item. We're trying to save costs by him not traveling down here. So thank you, Bob.
Okay, thank you.
Central Coast.
Central Coast. Dr. Lester.
Thank you, Chairman Kruger. Good morning again. Under the Central Coast District, we do have four waivers and three immaterial amendments and one immaterial extension to report on. We have received several objections to the first immaterial amendment listed in your materials, the Aldo's Harbor Restaurant. However, we do continue to believe that that should be processed as an immaterial amendment. We've worked closely with the applicant on revising the project to assure that public access issues are addressed and protected into the future. So, with that, we would recommend concurrence with the director's report on these minor items.
Any objections to the finding concurrence? Hearing none, the commission concurs.
Item 14, the consent calendar. Earlier today, we recommended moving item 17A, the Pedras Blancas Caltrans item, also to the consent calendar. This is similar to the item approved earlier today for the San Mateo County Coast, and is another example, in our view, of a strong effort being made to deal with temporary erosion threats to Highway 1 while investing significant resources in long-term planning for the least environmentally damaging alternative here. And in particular, in this case, we're well into a process looking closely at potential realignment of Highway 1 that would adequately protect the highway for many years into the future without requiring shoreline protection. So we would recommend approval of the consent calendar.
Commissioner Akajian?
Move approval.
Moved by Commissioner Akajian, seconded by Commissioner Potter. Both the maker and seconder are asking for a yes vote. Is there any objection to unanimous yes roll call vote on the consent item? Hearing none, commission unanimously approves the consent calendar.
Item 15A is executive director, a concurrence with the executive director's determination that the final action by San Luis Obispo County accepting certification of LCP Major Amendment 1-05 Part 1 concerning the Port San Luis Harbor District Master Plan is legally adequate. And we would recommend that the commission concur with this determination.
Okay. I just want to ask if there's any ex parties. No ex parties. Is there Does anyone object to concurring with the executive director's determination? Hearing none, the commission concurs.
Thank you. Item 15B is also an executive director determination on a major amendment in Santa Cruz County, and we are determining that this amendment is de minimis. The proposed amendment would add a R zoning district overlay to this LCP to provide for future potential increased residential densities to address housing allocations, statewide housing allocations. It's de minimis in our view because they're only adding the designation at this time, and there are no actual increased densities proposed, which would require future LCP amendments. So we are recommending that the commission concur with this determination.
Any ex parties? No ex parties. We have no speaker slips. Any objection to finding concurrence with the executive director's determination? Hearing none, the commission concurs.
Item 15C is also a determination of a de minimis amendment in Santa Cruz County. This amendment would result in amendments to the primary groundwater recharge areas map of the LCP, and again is a refinement based on new technologies, particularly GIS capabilities that the county has, and would result in better improved application of this particular set of standards concerning groundwater recharge in Santa Cruz County. I'm not aware of any objections, and we are recommending that there are no changes here that are beyond de minimis.
Any ex parties? No ex parties. We have no speaker slips. Is there any objection to finding concurrence with the executive director's determination? Hearing none, the commission concurs.
Item 15D is an LCP amendment in the city of Santa Cruz, and there is a presentation. I'll be brief. We are in agreement with the city on the modifications that are proposed here. The city, under this amendment, is proposing to incorporate a creeks and wetlands management plan into the LCP, and this would, in addition to amending the land use component, would also add zoning standards to implement the management plan. We've worked for a number of years closely with the city on this, and very closely in recent months in order to reach agreement on the proposed modifications and the substance of what's being proposed. This slide, which I've probably turned off. This slide, if you can make out the watershed in the blue areas, this gives you a sense of the urban area of Santa Cruz. That's the city in dark, and then the white line going through the area is the coastal zone boundary. You can see that the commission has jurisdiction over a substantial part of the urban area of Santa Cruz. Although the majority of the riparian areas are outside of the coastal zone, if you can see those drainage areas. Many of the city's watercourses are located in heavily urbanized areas of the city, and currently the city's LCP requires that new development be set back 100 feet from the center line of a creek or the edge of a wetland. In previous years, complying with this across-the-board requirement has proven a little difficult, particularly given the level of existing developments and legal nonconforming developments in the vicinity of riparian areas, and also the fact that many of the parcels in these areas are small, 5,000 square feet, for example. The city has issued a number of variances over the years to the 100-foot setback, which has created a great deal of process concerns, and also under the LCP necessitates site-specific management plan amendments in order to allow that. So this amendment was really generated out of mutual concern between the city and the commission that we needed a more comprehensive way to deal with this problem of urban redevelopment and new development adjacent to riparian areas. And the purposes of the amendment are to identify appropriate development setbacks for each individual reach in specific riparian areas based on an evaluation of habitat, stream, and existing land use characteristics. It also recommends management actions that would promote the preservation and enhancement of these riparian resources within the constraints of the existing urban developed area. It defines development guidelines and standards for areas where development adjacent to watercourses may be appropriate, and also provides a framework for permitting the development in these areas. So, to determine the level of permit review, the management plan categorizes all of those riparian areas as either A, B, or C type of riparian areas. In brief, category A include watercourse reaches that support high-quality riparian habitat with few gaps. Category B, watercourses are located in heavily urbanized areas and generally have limited riparian habitat confined by adjacent land uses, and this limits the ability for the riparian corridor to expand. And finally, category C, watercourses essentially are drainage channels that are concrete or man-made, do not have any habitat to speak of or habitat value. This slide here shows you the general application of the scheme within the LCP amendment, and it essentially results in identifying a riparian corridor that's intended to provide an adequate riparian width to maintain or enhance habitat and protect water quality. Allowable uses within this corridor are extremely limited, and the development setbacks intended to provide an appropriate buffer between riparian corridor and development. Allowable uses within the development setback area, which would be adjacent to the riparian area, include all the uses allowed in the riparian corridor and limited development, such as an upper floor addition to existing legal structure that's already within that area. The management area, which is further beyond the development setback, includes the riparian corridor, the development setback, and an additional 25 feet outward. And this would allow new development between the management area boundary and the development setback area, subject to a watercourse development permit. So there are, again, standards to address this area beyond the buffer area. As I mentioned, staff is recommending approval of the amendment if it's modified. And essentially, these modifications would relabel the northwest finger of Moore Creek as reach number 2 and increase the riparian corridor development setback width from 100 feet to 150 feet. Increase the riparian corridor width development setback for Reach 3 of Arroyo Seco Creek from 70 to 80 feet. Provide additional encouragement for restoration of Category B creeks. Place additional restrictions on the removal of riparian vegetation. Add additional species to the management plan's invasive non-native vegetation lists. And finally, include a definition of wetlands in the sense of an update that is consistent with the California Code of Regulations, the definition of wetlands that this commission uses. Again, we have worked closely with the city, including site-specific evaluations with our biologists, and we are in agreement with the city, and that concludes the staff presentation. The motions and resolutions are pages 3 and 4 of the staff report.
Thank you, Dr. Lester. And with that, I will ask for ex parties. Are there any ex parties starting to my left, my right? With that, I'll go to Commissioner Potter.
Mr. Chair, I move the Commission certify land use plan and major amendment number 1-06 as submitted by the City of Santa Cruz. Recommend a no vote.
Been moved by Commissioner Potter, seconded by Vice Chair Neely. Both the maker and seconder are asking for a no vote. Failure of this motion will result in the denial of the land use plan amendment as submitted and adoption of the resolution contained in the staff report. Would you like to speak to your motion, Commissioner Potter?
No.
Vice Chair Neely? Is there any objection to a unanimous no roll call vote on this item? Hearing none, the commission unanimously denies certification of the major amendment 1-1-06 to the land use plan of the City of Santa Cruz and adopts the findings that are set forth in the staff report.
Okay. Next motion, I move the Commission certify the City of Santa Cruz Land Use Plan and Major Amendment Number 1-06, if modified as suggested in the staff report. Recommend a yes vote.
Moved by Commissioner Potter, seconded by Vice Chair Neely. Both the maker and seconder are asking for a yes vote. Passage of this motion will result in the certification of the land use plan with the suggested modification and adoption of the resolutions and findings contained in the staff report. Would you like to speak to your motion, Commissioner Potter?
No.
Vice Chair Neely? Is there any objection to a unanimous yes roll call vote on this item? Hearing none, the Commission unanimously approves and thus certifies the City of Santa Cruz Land Use Plan Amendment 1-06, if modified as suggested, and adopts the findings set forth in the staff report.
In the third motion, I move the Commission reject Major Amendment Number 1-06 to the City of Santa Cruz's Local Coastal Program Implementation Plan as submitted. Recommend a yes vote.
It's been moved by Commissioner Potter and seconded by Vice Chair Neely. Both the maker and seconder are asking for a yes vote. And passage of this motion will result in the certification of the implementation program with the suggested modifications and the adoption of the resolutions and findings in the contained in the staff report. Do you want to speak to your motion, Commissioner Potter?
No.
Vice Chair Neely? No. Is there any objection to unanimous yes roll call vote on this item? Hearing none, the commission unanimously hereby certifies City of Santa Cruz Implementation Program Amendment 1-06.
And finally, I move the commission certify the City of Santa Cruz Implementation Plan Major Amendment Number 1-06, if modified as suggested in the staff report. Recommend a yes vote.
Second. It's been moved by Commissioner Potter and seconded by Vice Chair Neely, and both the maker and seconder are asking for a yes vote. Passage of this motion will result in the certification of the implementation program with the suggested modifications and adoption of the following resolutions and findings. Would you like to speak to your motion, Commissioner Potter?
Yeah, extensively. No, I'm kidding you. No, of course not.
We'll give you the time this way.
Well, certainly not.
Yeah, okay. Thank you. TGIF, huh? Is there any objection to unanimous yes roll call vote on this? Hearing none, the commission unanimously hereby certifies the City of Santa Cruz Implementation Program Number 1-06. Okay.
Item 15E is a Monterey County LCP amendment time extension only. And again, staff is recommending that the commission extend the deadline for commission action in this case by 1 year.
Okay. Commissioner Potter?
I move the commission extend the 60-day time limit to act on Monterey County Local Coastal Program Amendment Number 2-07, Part 3, to October 15th, 2008. Recommend a yes vote.
Second.
Moved by Commissioner Potter and seconded by Commissioner Akajian. They're both the maker and seconder asking for a yes vote, approval of the time extension. Is there any objection to unanimous yes roll call vote on the time extension? Hearing none, the commission unanimously approves the time extension.
And item 15F is similarly is a Monterey County LCP amendment time extension, and we are recommending that the time be extended for 1 year.
Commissioner Potter?
I move the commission extend the 90-day time limit to act on Monterey County Local Coastal Program Amendment Number 2-07, Part 2, to November 14th, 2008. Recommend a yes vote.
Second.
Moved by Commissioner Potter, seconded by Commissioner Akajian. Both the maker and seconder are asking for a yes vote for approval of the time extension. Is there any objection to unanimous yes roll call vote on this item? Hearing none, the commission unanimously approves the time extension.
The final Central Coast item today is 16B, and there is a brief slideshow for this one as well. Item 16B is a new appeal in the City of Carmel by the Sea. Overall, staff is recommending that the appeal raises no substantial issue. The project, as I mentioned, is in the urban area of City of Carmel, which has a certified LCP. Some of you may recall several years ago we worked extensively and closely with the city in getting their LCP certified, with particular attention to issues of community character and scale of new development and redevelopment. In this case, the project has been appealed by a local resident. The project that was approved by the city is the demolition of an existing 314-square-foot subordinate unit and construction of a 512-square-foot two-story addition to an existing approximate 1,200-square-foot single-family home. The proposed development is on a 4,000-square-foot lot. It's pretty typical for the City of Carmel to have these small lots, and one of the issues we dealt with in the LCP amendment was putting meaningful limits on the appropriate maximum scale of development on these lots. The appeal raises questions about whether the project violates the LCP view protection standards as they relate to the protection of private views from existing residences. The following two slides have been provided by the appellant, and if you can make out the proposed development, you can see the orange netting. This is a view from the residence patio, lower level view out towards the ocean. The orange netting you can see would represent where the addition would take place. It's just above. Let's see if I can find my pointer. Right here is where the addition would take place. This is a view from the upper story. You get a slightly better vantage point on the blue water views, and then here's, again, where the development would be taking place. We've evaluated the contentions of the appeal, which are limited to these protection of private view standards that were certified in the LCP, and we do not believe that there's a substantial issue raised by the impact of this development on existing views, and therefore recommending that no substantial issue be found. We would like to point out that in terms of public views, which, of course, is a more important concern for the commission typically, that was not raised as an issue by the appellant, and so is not a basis for a finding here. And although the massing in the public view shed in this case may not be ideal, we, again, don't feel it's a significant effect on neighborhood character or public views. But, again, that's not an issue in this case, but could potentially be an issue in future appeals in the city of Carmel. So with that, I would conclude and, again, recommend that the commission find no substantial issue raised by the appeal.
Thank you very much, Dr. Lester. Are there any ex parte starting on my left? Commissioner Potter.
Mr. Chair, on, I believe, October 1st, Mr. Bridges, representative for the applicant, and Mr. Salas were in my office. They briefly discussed their assessment of public view impacts and stated that they were in support of the staff recommendation. On October 5th, I accidentally bumped into Mr. Salas at a cocktail party I was at in Carmel, and he stated that he would not be present today, but his agent, Mr. Bridges, would. And on Saturday, October 6th, on my way to the beach, I did walk by the project and take a look at the purported impacts to public views.
Thank you, Commissioner Potter. Anyone else? Okay. With that, no other ex partes. I'll open the public hearing. And normally at this time I would call on the appellants first in the process there, but I have no speaker slips from the appellant. And the rules are you get 3 minutes per side. So I'll call up the applicant's representative, John Bridges, at which time we'll give you 3 minutes, sir.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the Commission. John Bridges on behalf of the applicant, Mr. Sales. We do agree with the staff recommendation that no substantial issue is presented here with regard to the LCP. This is a private view issue. There really is no public issue. There is no statewide issue. The code in Carmel calls for the balancing and sharing of private views. The City Council of Carmel by the Sea applied those terms, sharing and balancing, and found that this home did in fact comply. This is a typical modest addition, actually situated behind a tree in the backyard of the home, with the intent of preserving a majority of the neighbors' views. I believe if you look at pages 8 and 9 of your Exhibit 6 to your staff report, a picture will speak 1,000 words in this instance. We would ask that you concur with the City Council of Carmel. We would ask that you concur with your staff and that you find no substantial issue. To do otherwise would likely invite every private view complaint in the City of Carmel, no matter how insignificant, to be appealed to your Central Coast staff, and they are already overburdened. And I believe their time would be better spent focusing on important California Coastal Act issues. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Bridges. Thank you for your testimony, sir. With that, I'll go back to Dr. Lester for any comments. No more? Okay, then I'll go to the Commission. Commissioner Potter.
Mr. Chair, I move the Commission determine that appeal number A-3-CML-07-042 raises no substantial issue with respect to the grounds on which the appeal has been filed under Section 30603 of the Coastal Act. Recommend a yes vote.
Second.
Just briefly speaking to my motion, I concur with Dr. Lester's statements regarding the fact that the appeal does not address public views but rather private views, and the attached letter and the addendum submitted by James and Gail Finnegan very specifically cites only the impacts to their private views, not the public views.
Thank you, Commissioner Potter. And who made the second there, just so I know? Commissioner Kachin? Okay. The maker and the seconder are both asking for a yes vote, and again, is there any, and what this will do will be passage of this motion will result in finding of no substantial issue. So with that, is there any objection to unanimous yes roll call vote on this item? Hearing none, the commission finds the appeal number A-3-CML-07-042 does not present a substantial issue. Okay.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Director Douglas.
We're prepared to go back to the fees. I think Susan and Madeline and John have worked out some modifications here to address concerns that you raised. So if we could do that, and then I understand you have some public comments, and surprise, surprise, we'll be through much earlier than we
thought. Also, Director Douglas, one other thing we want to talk about is from yesterday, again, just some comments on the San Francisco meeting I want to bring up at the very end.
Oh, okay.
Some commissioners have wanted to talk about that.
Somebody's got a BlackBerry on or something?
Or an
iPod?
I have nothing. My phone's off. No, cell phone's off.
Somebody turned down there. Okay. Okay, we're ready to go back. Hanch,
thank you
for working so quickly out there.
We've done our best. Madeline, John Bowers, and I have some suggestions for you.
Okay.
And we have suggestions for the grading fees, changes to the subdivision, and also changes to the relationship in the commercial industrial to the square footage and the project cost. I'm going to have Madeline walk you through it. My suggestion is that you get the staff report, and the first changes are on page 2 of Exhibit A. And grab a pencil and mark them down as we go through them, and then they'll make a lot more sense. And our goal would be to make any adjustments you want to make in these suggestions, and then for the commission to vote to include these in the public review proposal. So, Madeline, please go ahead.
So, page 2. Page 2, under the grading fees, we were hoping to keep the fee for small amounts of grading, 51 to 100 cubic yards, the same that it is now, $500, just so that the construction of a single-family home wouldn't be hit too hard. And then we're proposing to increase the fees as follows. 101 to 1,000 cubic yards of grading would be $1,000. 1,001 cubic yards to 10,000 cubic yards would be $2,000. 10,001 to 100,000 cubic yards would be $3,000. 100,000 to 200,000 cubic yards of grading would be $5,000. And 200,000 and 1 cubic yards or more of grading would be $10,000. Is that clear?
Yes, and those are not prohibitive fees, so that's probably good.
Okay.
Okay.
I think it would make most sense if we go through each one, and if commissioners have questions, let's address that. And so if everybody's comfortable with grading, then we'll move on to the next one.
Any of my colleagues, you want to jump in
on
anything, just please.
Okay, so on page 3, under the development cost, we realize that basically, our development costs are a little bit outdated. So instead of changing the fees, we're proposing to change the development cost categories. So the first category, instead of being a $3,000 fee for projects that are under $50,000 in development cost, we would bump that up to $100,000. On page 3 of Exhibit A of the staff report. So the first category...
Is everyone finding...
No, I don't think so.
Exhibit A at the back of the staff report. Page 3 of 6.
Did you find it? Okay, they did. Go ahead.
So, as I said, we're proposing to change the fee categories as opposed to the actual fees. So the first category under development cost would be a $3,000 fee for a project under $100,000.
It currently says $50,000.
The next fee category would be $100,000 to $500,000, and that would have a fee of $6,000. The next category would be $500,000 to $2 million, and that would be $10,000. From $2 to $5 million would be $20,000. The next category would be $5 to $10 million, and that would be $25,000. After that, $10 million to $25 million would be $30,000. Then $25 to $50 million would be $50,000. Sorry, should I slow down?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah. You're a very fast thinker. And
sorry,
you know,
about that.
Yeah. We're just a little slower up here. I'm speaking for myself.
I didn't want to bore everyone.
Okay, we're again in Exhibit A, page 3 of 6. And okay, Exhibit A, page 3 of 6, and it says a little chart that says development costs and then fee on the right side. Has everyone found it? What we're trying to do is update the, take into account Commissioner Kruger's comments about that we're not very current on what project costs really costs. So we're trying to make it more accurate.
But makes it closer,
right,
at least,
it
when
does.
You do the trigger. I mean,
right.
There's
a
fairness equity issue here. And
it's a very good
what
point.
We didn't have any speakers here today, which I'm surprised. They should have come. They were noticed. But that's where you would they would come in and cry foul play, you know. Okay.
Right.
Keep going.
All right. So we'll go. Let's go through it again.
Okay. So the first fee category, instead of $50,000 or less, would be now $100,000 or less. The second fee category, and the fee would be $3,000. So the fees are going to stay the same. We're just going to change the category, the cost of development. So the second category, instead of being $50,000 to $100,000, would be $100,000 to $500,000. That would, again, have the fee of $6,000. The next fee category would be changed to $500,000 to $2 million, and that fee would be $10,000. Then we'd go $2 million to $5 million, and that would be $20,000. Sorry, $2 million and $1 to $5 million. And then the next one would be $5 million and $1 to $10 million, and that fee would be $25,000. And then we'd go $10 million and $1 to $25 million, which would be $30,000. And then $25 million and $1 to $50 million. The second to last category would be $50 million and $1 to $100 million. And then the final category would stay how it is at $100 million and $1 or more.
Okay. I think that's much closer, and you can argue the issues on the either the greater of the two. They're okay?
Yeah. Okay. And then on page 5 of 6, the same Exhibit A, mm-hmm. We're just proposing to increase the fee for subdivisions so that it would be the fee shall be $3,000 for each of the first 4 lots plus $1,000 for each additional lot.
Okay. I have no problem with that.
Okay.
Any other commissioners? Commissioner Koshin, do you have something on that, sir?
Yes, Mr. Chair. If I may, with your permission, I would like to ask Mr. Plowes, how would this reimbursement affect other agencies, since he represents other agencies? Would you have an opinion on this, if I may ask that question to him, Mr. Chair?
Well, is it on this point? Yeah, I guess you come up and we'll, yeah. Yes, sir.
Yes, Chairman Kruger, members of the commission, and Commissioner Shajian.
Could you state your name for the record?
Toe Plow from Santa Barbara. I represent a number of energy companies in various applications before a variety of government agencies. Generally, the way we work is on a fee reimbursement basis. So we reimburse 100% of for instance, Santa Barbara County's costs, State Lands Commission costs for any of our applications that come in the door. And this would include not only their staff time, but an overhead fee as well to take care of any facility fees that they incur as well. In this fee proposal, I'm not sure exactly how it would address energy projects per se. Let me give you another example. We're currently working on an energy project with State Lands and the Coastal Commission where we do a joint review process by which members of Coastal Commission staff, State Lands staff, County of Santa Barbara staff all work together. They agree, the agencies, that is, agree on what outside consultants they want to hire. They then send us bills. We reimburse all of that, and we don't have any problem with that. With this proposal, I'm a little bit confused as to how that might affect a project that we'd be working on in the future. And I just want to bring this to the attention of the commission so that perhaps some more questions could be asked in that regard. Thank you.
Would staff clarify, please? Push it harder.
The microphone here. The energy company that would be applying for a...
Can you lift it up? So
it's not wanting to stay up. The energy company that would be applying for the proposal would be pay a filing fee based on the cost of the project or the square footage. It would probably be the full cost at $250,000. And I think the gentleman is speaking about if we're participating with State Lands Commission or local governments on committees, or the company can still pay for the costs to attend meetings and things like that. There's a provision in the regulations which allow the commission to charge for other reasonable costs, and so there's ways to have that covered as well. And we don't always do that. Often what happens is we're provided transportation for the staff to attend meetings and things like that, but it does not pay staff costs. It does not pay salaries, things like that. It just pays usually travel.
I think the point he's raising is, and what we're saying is that there is a separate permit fee if you file an application with the Coastal Commission. So whatever fee or costs they incur relative to any support for a task force or a joint agency undertaking, that's separate from the permit application fee with the Coastal Commission.
That is the case?
Yes, that's my understanding.
Hasn't that always been the case?
Yes, it's always been the case. So if you're applying for a permit from the State Lands Commission, you have one fee. If you're applying for the, and you need a commission permit, a Coastal Commission permit, it's an additional fee. It's always been that way. And is that your question?
Well, created a little more confusion than I started with. And and I don't know if it's fair to ask Mr. Plow to come back again to clarify the understanding, well, Mr. Chair.
If you can, we didn't have anyone here from the public to speak today, so we would welcome him up to answer your question for clarification. Yeah. So, sir, you
but
can come up.
But it's standard practice that each agency charges a separate fee for the processing of a permit.
You can ask him a question again, Commissioner Kajian. Same question, so clarification.
If I understood the question properly, it's that the question was whether work is covered as well as an additional permit fee. Is that a fair characterization of the question? And yes, we generally pay a filing fee for any permits that we get, but any kind of effort that is taken on by any of the agencies, such as attending meetings, actual office expenses, hourly expenses, overhead, additional hiring of consultants that are needed, we then reimburse the agencies for all of those costs. And so what I'm picking up from this is that in a flat fee situation, you would anticipate that all the costs would be drawn from the flat fee and that you would not be incurring any other expense on top of that. I'm not sure whether that's the case. I'm posing that almost as a question myself. But just to give you a history, generally the way we work with the other agencies is on that basis. We pay a filing fee, but then we reimburse the agency for all their out-of-pocket costs as well as their overhead or the hiring of any other consultants as well.
Let me ask Mrs. Hanchford.
But generally it's not in the same sort of magnitude of filing fee that we're talking about here.
No.
And if you're talking about a project that runs $1 billion or $2 billion, you're talking about a big fee, unless you cap it.
Well,
the speaker is discussing cost recovery system versus flat fees, and the commission's fees are flat fees, and then we're able to have some direct offset of costs for travel, things like that, through working with other local or state governments. And State Lands Commission, we would work with State Lands Commission on energy projects and work with them to select the consultants, and then State Lands Commission takes care of hiring those consultants. But we have a different structure. State Lands has a combination of flat fees and cost recovery, but they're also the agency that in most cases is the lead agency on doing the environmental impact report, where the consultants are needed for that. So it's a little different view of how to do it.
Well, you have your fees are capped anyway. They seem to be on the high end right now.
We do not charge for recovery.
But you brought up
costs.
A good point. If it's $1 billion, maybe we should have capped these higher.
Well, you can raise them.
We can certainly, right now is the perfect time if you'd like to add another category for projects over a cost that it's more than 250, that it's 500,000 or something for a multi-billion-dollar project. That would be fine, and this is the time to do it.
I think the point is that we do not charge for cost recovery. Other agencies, they do. We don't. So for us, it's just a flat fee. So there is no additional charge from us for services that they need to provide.
Yeah. But you have, I just want to point that out, there is a cap right now in place. So, and it's a pretty sizable fee. So I'm not suggesting we go higher. But.
Okay.
Anything else? Commissioner Cushing, do you have anything else?
No, sir.
No, sir. Okay, any of my colleagues, do you have some more to go down? Do you want to proceed till we, is there any other
changes? Those are all our changes, unless you wanted to add another higher level fee for projects that are over. Right now it's $100 million or above, so we could add something, another level above that. And that the peak fee is, top fee is $250,000. If you want to add one more level, we can do that right now.
The only problem is that I think that something like that are usually, I'm not so sure I for one want to do that now, because it just shock everybody when they see that category, et cetera, and I'm not so sure it comes to play much, if ever, and if it does, maybe it still isn't justified, the cost relationship to the size of the fee that goes up. But if people want to do it, it's fine. I'm not so sure now we want to. The only speaker we had here today came up and asked if there was a thing, and then we raised the fee up dramatically. I'm not so sure that's real good justice.
Well, that's the wonder of public participation.
Going soft on the energy companies.
So, anyway, it's up to, right now, I think what the changes you made are excellent, and unless my colleagues have any other changes they want to make.
Mr. Chairman. Yeah. Because we're suggesting these changes, you would have to vote on this.
Okay.
On these changes.
You're voting to release them in the public review package, as you voted on the previous ones.
Then,
and you can use the same resolution.
Oh, where's the resolution? What page? The same one we...
Page three.
Yes. You can just make the same motion.
Same motion, okay.
Per the staff oral recommendations.
Any of my colleagues would like to make the motion? Commissioner Cushing, if you
I make
like
the same motion for approvals.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
He moved it.
Yeah, I know. Commissioner Cushing did. Commissioner Potter, did you? Okay. Did you second that, Commissioner Potter?
Not sure.
Yeah, okay. been moved by Commissioner Akajian, seconded by Commissioner Potter, and they're both of them are asking for a yes vote. And is there any objection to a unanimous yes roll call vote on this? Hearing none, the commission unanimously approves, hereby revises the proposed amendments to section 13055 and adds proposed amendments to section 13111 of the commission's regulations and directs staff to submit the revised amendments to OAL and initiate the additional comment period required under the Administrative Procedure Act. Okay? Would you like us to do something else? Staff's done an excellent job on that.
And thank you for spending the time today. It was very helpful to us.
And our hope is that at the November meeting you can adopt them and then we can pass them on and put them into effect. Okay, with that, Mr. Chairman, I think we're to public comments.
Yeah, we're doing... before I do public comments, I want to ask a question that several commissioners since yesterday have asked me about, the one that had to do with the meeting in San Francisco. Have we... Commissioner Potter, you wanted to...
Susan, yesterday I brought up the fact that apparently the location for the December meeting has been changed from San Francisco to Marin, and meaning no disrespect to the community of Marin, Commissioner. It has been a decade-long tradition that we would be in San Francisco, and I know we had an issue with the Embarcadero Hyatt, but I had made arrangements with the Fisherman's Wharf Hyatt. And so there's two issues here. One is I think the commission would prefer to be in San Francisco. The other is go a little bit out of my way to exert some influence on hoteliers that I might know to see if we can make accommodations in certain areas. And when I do that and then it's undone and I don't know anything about it, it's a little bit of a surprise to me and a bit of a disappointment because I do expend a bit of effort. And I'm kind of curious as to why when we walk out the door of a hotel that we're at, we don't make a reservation for that hotel the following year, because there's been some disconnect along the way here. We have a committee of Chairman Crew and myself to try to go ahead and find affordable accommodations. Director Douglas passed this whole thing off to you as being a budget-related issue and thus your fault somehow. I'm not really here to pass blame. I'm just curious as to how we ended up so distant from Marin, and neither I nor I think anybody on the commission realized there had been a change.
And also, we haven't signed a contract yet for Marin. Are we really stuck with Marin?
I was told no.
Offense to my friend Commissioner Kinsey, but
Let me look into it. There may have been a few issues of... We could improve the communication in the future. Also, personally, I did not understand that we still had a committee that was reviewing and okaying locations, and it was my understanding that any location the commission had previously held meetings and was comfortable with, if it was convenient and in the geographic area, we could do that. I will be happy to refer to you in the future and double-check things.
Well, actually, I usually communicate with Vanessa.
Right. And I will talk.
So I was just as surprised as you are that we were still in existence. I was surprised that you were the person taking care of it.
Well,
Vanessa's
the person that takes care of the actual bookings and working with the hotels. I have the lovely opportunity to try to make decisions to save money. And the location in Marin is free, which is a lot better than charging a per-day cost, and also the costs of the parking and other things at the Hyatt, it's $49 a day to park. So that is quite cumulative. It's quite a high cost. So when we just looked at the cost, that was the choice. And if it's the pleasure of the commission and it's a very important thing to do to try to stay in San Francisco, we can look at other locations. We do need this new year, though, in order to not have to lay staff off, we are going to have to cut significant costs, and using public meeting rooms to do that is one way to do that.
And I'm sure we can look at that, and we've used public meeting rooms in the past several times, even to the level of using local governments.
Right, and that's why we chose Marin, and the commission has met at that location before, and we understood the commission was comfortable with that location.
And in the past, when there's been an issue with the cost of the meeting room, I've been able to do some negotiations in those areas to either reduce or eliminate in the past. So I never got a chance to try to make any efforts in this much-preferred location. So what would be helpful, I think, is if we sat down, and we do always pick the calendar, perhaps at the start of the year, once the calendar is picked, we could make one intense effort to get hotel commitments at that time and then move from there on.
I agree with you, and we have tried to do that. Many of the hotels don't want to book with us way ahead of time because they don't make very much money on our rates until they're sure that it's worth it to them to do it.
And it's not that you don't argue well, but I may argue better when it comes to influence on what comes with the commission other than just the hard costs of the commission themselves. There are other ancillary benefits to having the commission meetings that hotel.
Okay. So why don't you and I talk, and we will, if the commission has a very strong belief that they would like to meet in December in San Francisco, we can attempt to make that work. I do want to make it very clear that we have to meet in as many public meeting rooms that are no charge for the rest of the year, or we are going to have to lay staff off. That's one way to really save money.
Commissioner Burke.
My recollection is that there's a public parking lot a few blocks away from the Hyatt down at Fisherman's Wharf. But that aside, this is the only commission I've ever served on in my life that the commission itself didn't get involved with the budget process. So I know that it's going to be a struggle with the budget over the coming year or so, but I think that maybe we could be helpful in contributing some ideas on how to streamline some of these costs if we knew what they were. I've never seen a budget. I've only been here 5 or 6 years, but I've never seen a budget since I've been here. So maybe the budget should be made available to the commissioners and get their input on that.
We are going to be briefing the commission at the November meeting on the budget, and we have done it every year. But we're happy to provide options for cost cutting, and would welcome any commissioner suggestions for further ways to do that.
Well, you know, an option for cost cutting is one thing, but a review of the entire budget is an entirely different thing. So I don't know how the other commissioners feel about it. They may be comfortable in approving options, you know, but I think that you have a number of people up here who have dealt with public agency budgets throughout their careers, and they may be able to provide some input to you.
Commissioner Warren.
I just have a question, Commissioner Burke. We generally do have a budget shown to us. What I'm sensing is that the ones that come may not be as detailed enough for you, and perhaps that may be what needs to happen. Is perhaps maybe you
That's
can
exactly
suggest?
What, I'm sorry, I wasn't clear.
Yeah, to suggest to staff the kinds of things, we don't have to do it right here, that you'd like to see on a more detailed budget, so that you can get involved in that.
Thank you very much, Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, if I might, just building on those two ideas, I look at a budget as not a document that's cast in stone, but rather a living, breathing document that's subject to change based on the nuances of the year. And there's always unforeseen costs and changes that cause budget shift. And whether it's, you know, projects that are more intense in labor, whether it's some sort of change in the staffing dynamics or whatever. I've been in local government for 20 years, and I agree with Commissioner Burke. I've never really not had a budget subcommittee. And we don't need to go there today, but I think when we do have a discussion about the budget next month, that would be a great time to have some detailed discussion about what are the expenses that are going on that perhaps we're not aware of on a more regular basis, and perhaps get a little bit more into the depth of the budget than what we have done, which is, as Commissioner Wan said, gone taking a look at it, but perhaps not to the level of detail that some of the commissioners would like to now. So I think these are good suggestions.
Yeah, I think when I first came on the commission, we had a budget committee, and I thought it was still, Commissioner Riley was on it, et cetera, a subcommittee. And it's a good idea, and any time commission it might be something that we can be very helpful with and look at to help you, because things are contracted. I firmly believe in budget review items. I've sat on a lot of public boards, too, and commission boards, and they're always very useful. So it might be something. I thought we had one, and I know that we had a subcommittee with three members during Commissioner, two members, I'm sorry, with two Commissioner Juan was chair, I remember.
Is that right?
Yeah. And I think the one last comment I'd like to make on it is that I've heard from a lot of people, if we have not, again, with all due respect to Marin, if we have not signed a contract, we should look at, and I understand the budget parameters, but there's some of us on here that don't request any money back on anything or expenses, and it would be good if we're saving money in those areas, and I know a couple of us that do that, and it would be nice to make sure that everybody, because the meetings sometimes can be very long and difficult, that we have at least a place like San Francisco has been a tradition. And I didn't know about that either, but I'm not in favor of moving to Marin versus San Francisco, because I don't know if you really save money in the long run because of the driving and the difficulty of getting there with as far as cost of airlines and everything else. I don't know in the end you save money. It's a great place to visit. It's a great place to live, but I'm not so sure for public meetings is as good as San Francisco, the city of San Francisco. So if we can move it, and it isn't done. I've heard from a lot of commissioners on this now. In fact, I haven't heard anybody tell me, let's keep it in Marin.
Well, Commissioner Currie, are you speaking because it's a tradition in December and you're open to meeting in Marin at other times of the year?
Absolutely.
It's because you want to be in December in
San Francisco. Yeah.
Okay. We'll do what we can.
And I've heard from many commissioners on it. I'm just passing it on. So. Yes.
I hate to belabor the point, but I would say from a cost-saving standpoint that being in San Francisco in December is not a very cost-saving endeavor because of the time of year that it is. And it's I'm a native San Franciscan, so I just have to speak a little bit to that. And having worked in the Embarcadero area, I'm familiar with those parking lots, and they fill up, the public parking lots fill up generally by about 8 o'clock in the morning. And my concern would be for the public coming to those meetings, and if it's true that parking lot at the hotel is $49 a day, that's a tremendous impact to the public who want to come to a public meeting and speak. So I'd have some serious concerns for the public part of it.
Anyone else? Yeah. Anybody else? Okay, and with that, we'll go to public comment period. Jackie de Havilland?
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for allowing me this time. My name is Jackie de Havilland. I am a member of the equine community in Southern California. I was student body president of Pierce College from 1999 to 2000, during which time when I went back to school, I studied veterinary technology, natural resource management, equine science, wildlife management, fire science, among other things. I became student body president at Pierce College in order to prevent that administration from turning that campus farm into a golf course. That farm is still there, and the animals, fortunately, are still on that farm. After Pierce, I went into law. What you are receiving right now is further information. I have for you additional information. In absolute opposition to a permit, CDP 406163, which was granted to Malibu Valley Farms, and I urge your review of these documents. Ladies and gentlemen, we were duped, all of us, those of us who supported it initially, have now found out that Mr. Boudreaux's facility would in fact not completely close down, because your staff has done investigations of how this should have been handled. You can even see on this map here, which is from your staff, areas that they defined where he could. Do I get everybody's attention here, please? Thank you. Where he could have moved his facility into other areas on his property and still have been in compliance with the requests of the Coastal Commission. Horse people are very close. We supported him because he said he needed support, and he left a lot of things out of what he told us. I was even asked for advice by one of his attorneys and by Stephanie Abramson of Pony Cross Farms. It's my job to check facts, and the more I checked, the more betrayed I felt. Malibu Valley Farms was never in danger of being shut down, as would broadcast the entire equine community, and was testified to you. I didn't need to write down the information that I've given you today because it came to me. It's collected in one spot. And if you look at number one, you'll find that your own staff, it's a smaller version of this map, found places for him on his own property to accommodate the requests of the Coastal Commission. You will find on in item number three a statement by his attorney that he just didn't feel like it. In item number four, Mr. Boudreaux made requests for permits to replace shelters that did not exist under the Coastal Commission ordinances. You revoked those permits wisely, and he built those facilities anyway. They're still there, he's using them daily, and they are within feet of the stream. I urge you not to succumb to the charm and prestidigitation of Brian Boudreaux, as we all did initially, and rescind his permits. Make him comply with the ordinances you have devised, please. You will find also in your packet some more information that will be introduced two young companions.
Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you very
today.
Much.
Thank you. Okay. Valeria Burkholder? Valerie Burkholder?
Hi, my name is Valerie Burkholder. I live in Calabasas, California, and I have a speech for you. In July at the San Luis Obispo hearing, you approved a coastal development permit for Malibu Valley Farms that allowed them to have only a 50-foot setback instead of the 100-foot setback prescribed by the Malibu Land Use Plan. The developer brought in horse people from all over California, many of whom knew little or nothing about him, the project, the site, or its history. They had simply been told that horse people needed to band together to oppose it because the Coastal Commission was trying to close down a horse facility, and that it would be terrible and precedent-setting if they let that happen. So they came. Nothing could be further from the truth. The developer and his team of smooth-talking, expensive attorneys wined you and dined you and told you what an important community service they would provide. Nothing could be further from the truth. They even brought in a lady on crutches who led you to believe that the farm was somehow this great service to the community because it regularly brought in disadvantaged poor kids from the inner city. Nothing could be further from the truth. And that is the main problem. Much of what they said strayed markedly away from persuasive speaking into misrepresentation of the facts, either by omission of pertinent details or by twisting the truth into a distortion of its former self. I am here today because one of those truths that was so badly twisted involved my mother. She testified at that hearing in July. She was just following through on a huge 400,000 square foot convention center the developer was trying to build on some of his property in the area in 2005. She isn't a neighbor of the project crying, "Not in my backyard." She just cares about things, and when she sees something that she doesn't think is right, she does something about it. That's how she got involved with the Malibu Valley Inn issue. The developer was trying to pass it off as an equestrian center and health spa, but she smelled a rat. After a lot of research, she found out that it was really a convention center and shopping plaza, and it didn't have any equestrian component except for some decorative elements. The only equestrian component was the Malibu Valley Farms, which was already operating, but illegally, without any permits. Although Malibu Valley Farms is an unincorporated LA county, the developer did not want to try to get his convention center approved through the county because he knew Zev Yaroslavsky would never allow it. And indeed, Zev did come out publicly against him and even collaborated with State Representative Fran Pavley and State Senator Sheila Kuehl to oppose it. So the developer tried to talk the city of Calabasas into annexing the property and approving the development because he thought he had a better chance with them. The trouble was that city council members didn't want to take any potentially unpopular positions right before an election, so they decided to put it on the November ballot for the people to decide. My mom, who knew the project better than anybody else by that time, wrote the ballot argument stating the reasons why people should vote against the convention center. The developer sued her, claiming that everything she said was a lie.
Ms. Burkholder, your time's up.
Okay.
Thank you very much for that testimony, though, today. Very well done. Nolan Burkholder.
My name is Nolan Burkholder. I live in Calabasas. I'm Valerie's brother.
3 minutes.
I'm here to clear up the record regarding Malibu Valley Farms, whose CDP was approved at the July 9th San Luis Obispo hearing. And I just think you were grossly misled by Brian Boudreau and his team about the necessity of their facility to the Compton Junior Posse, who are admittedly a great resource to the community, but they don't use Malibu Valley Farms. And all of their internet references to Compton Junior Posse, the only thing that was mentioned about Malibu Valley Farms was nothing. And all of their references, they say they were at Trancas Riders and Ropers, which is extensively mentioned in everything that their chairman talks about. So a few of the commissioners actually were so moved by the fact that Compton Junior Posse used Malibu Valley Farms. I mean, they were moved by Compton Junior Posse that they decided to approve the coastal development permit on the grounds that, not solely on the grounds that they liked the program, but that Compton Junior Posse was such a necessity to the community that they couldn't shut down their only farm. So the CDP was approved. We don't agree with that, and we filed a lawsuit, and we're planning a revocation request. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Burkholder. And with that, that's the last public speaker slips. Director Douglas or Ms. Hanch, do you have anything else? Director Douglas? That's it. We'll see everybody
November.
In November in San Diego.
San Diego, yes. Thank
Lovely
you.
Lovely San Diego.